Hello and welcome to a new episode of Third Degree Burn. I'm nonchalant Nigel Spink, the burn fan in Japan, and I'm excited to bring you the all-new Sideburn special, X-Men: The Hidden Years, Season 2. Yes, the Merry Mutants are back, and I'm pleased to say that my co-host conspirator, John Happy-Go-Lucky Hyatt, is back too. Hello, John.
Hi, Nigel. Great to be back for Season 2.
Yes, good. And as we said, we are halfway through the John Byrne run on X-Men The Hidden Years. We've covered the first 11 issues already, which you listeners can still listen to if you go back into the Third Degree Burn podcasts, and you will find those in there to listen to. And so we're going to continue today with issue number 12, which I believe you have the synopsis for, John.
I do, yes. And it's a double-sized anniversary issue.
Oh, great stuff. So we're going to twice the thrills.
Yeah.
Twice the spills, yeah.
That's right, boy. And I'll tell you, I remember way back when I was a kid collecting these in the 70s, how exciting it was to have a double-sized issue. And usually it was at like the 25, the 50, the 75, the 100 marks, and or a king-size annual. And those were always so fun to get because you were going to get either an expanded story or some extra pages in the back with some cool tidbits about, mansion drawing cutaways or things, headquarters cutaways and things like that. So always fun, cool things. So yep, didn't get any of that in this double size issue, but we got a big story. So that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So great. Do we want to start with the cover first or just read the synopsis that I have?
It's up to you. Which way do you want to do it?
Let me do the details. We'll read the synopsis, then we'll just get right into it. How's that?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So we are covering X-Men: The Hidden Years, number 12. It was released on September 7th, 2000, almost 25 years ago.
God, wow. Yeah. Wow. Seems like just yesterday.
Yes, it does.
Maybe last week. Yeah.
The cover is November of 2000. The writer, penciler, letterer, and the cover artwork was done by John L. Byrne. Inker, Tom Palmer. Colorist, Gregory Wright. Editor, Jason Liebig. Editor-in-chief is Bob Harris. That month, in September, the only other book was Spider-Woman 17.
Ooh.
So he was, remember back in the 70s, he was doing 3, 4, 5 books a month. Now he's down to 2. Poor guy. It's a lot of work he does when he does it all. I mean, writer, penciler, letter, covers, the whole thing. So that is a lot of work. So definitely. So we haven't covered Spider-Woman 17, but I mean, we both did read that at the time. And if I recall correctly for you, I did. I was reading it. I was liking it.
No, I didn't. I didn't read that one. I was aware of it because it kept crossing over once or twice with Amazing Spider-Man, which I was reading. So I knew it existed, but I never actually read the Spider-Woman title.
Okay. Yeah, and this is not the Jessica Drew Spider-Woman.
No.
This is Maddie. So.
It's the Mattie Franklin, yeah.
So I liked it well enough. So, and here's our synopsis. Now, this was a synopsis I pulled off Fandom, so it works for me, and I didn't go a lot more depth into it, because we'll go through the book. So,
yeah, okay.
In Dunphy, Illinois, 10-year-old mutant Ashley Martin. It's funny, every time I see that, I think of Aston Martin's the car. Ashley Martin is upset with Professor X and the Beast because they made her destroy the Sentinel, which she deemed to be her friend. Xavier realizes Ashley possesses powers of psychokinetic bonding, which might be more powerful than even Marvel Girl's telekinesis. Meanwhile, Stefan Krueger is about to meet the three members of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, the Blob, Mastermind, and Eunice, the Untouchable, as those three step on board Krueger's ship to take over the captured X-Men. Candy Southern has a chance to escape because Krueger did not actually shut her mind down with his powers, as she is not a mutant, and she was faking to be knocked out. But eventually, she falls to the illusion powers of Mastermind. Krueger seems to receive $100,000 for Cyclops, Marva Girl, and Candy, and I just want to remind our listeners that Candy was dressed in Marvel Girl's green dress costume and to try to kind of fake that she, so that people would kind of think that she's a part of the team. And Marvel Girl is dressed in a black and yellow costume reminiscent of the original costumes that they got back in the early part of the series. The original series, that is. Okay, so Krueger seems to receive the money, but the money is actually just another illusion crafted by Mastermind. Eventually, Mastermind gets back with Blob and Eunice with the now truly unconscious X-Men with Candy. And they kind of have a good laugh. Blob has a good laugh that Krueger was dumb enough to fall for the illusions again, apparently. And they have a good laugh about how they're going to try to continue taking over the world. Near an island of the Savage Land, Havoc and Lorna Dane, testing the codename Magentrix, are flying in a hovercraft. And according to the Mini Cerebro on board, getting closer to Iceman. On the island, Magneto has made a replacement helmet and prepares himself to attack two other quote-unquote humans, Dr. Karl Lykos and Bobby Drake. He does not know yet that these two are Iceman and Sauron. Below the island's surface, Magneto discovers a huge geothermal plant, and he plans to use the lava at the bottom to his advantage. Back on the surface, his attack on Bobby and Carl does not go as planned, though. When Bobby sees Carl being attacked by Magneto, he tries to help him and touches him. Lykos feeds off Bobby's mutant energies and transforms into Sauron. As this dinosaur attacks Magneto, the X-Men's flyer goes haywire and crash lands close to Iceman. When Bobby sees Lorna, all his memories return instantly, and he helps his fellow X-Men. Together, the three watch how Sauron has caught Magneto in his hypnotic gaze and is draining his power slowly. This bothers Iceman because he does not want to see, because he thinks that if Sauron gets all of Magneto's power, that will make him virtually unstoppable. Meanwhile, Havoc was willing to let Sauron drain him dry. Which I thought was kind of cool. So without a plan, Iceman intervenes and breaks the hypnotic gaze, which frees the Master of Magnetism. Sauron then takes control of Havoc to attack Magneto, and now pulls the lava from under the island. Lorna figures out that Magneto is powered by an external device, which Amphibious is guarding in the bushes nearby. Amphibious has the task to guard that device, but Iceman has no problem destroying the equipment. This depowers Magneto, and without his powers, he's threatened to be engulfed by the lava. While the lava is raising above him and threatening to pull him under, Magneto tries to convince Sauron to help him that they would make an unbeatable team, and he even promises Sauron a place in his kingdom. Sauron is not interested in any kind of partnership and realizes that he has all he needs in the Savage Land and leaves Magneto to fall to his doom. Before leaving the island, Sauron uses his hypnotic gaze to make the X-Men forget that they fought him and that they fought Magneto as well on the island. Epilogue. 3 days later, Magneto crawls to the surface of the island. Once again, he has cheated death. But he passes out from exhaustion. Epilogue 2, so to speak, a few days later go by, and Namor, the Submariner, passes by the island and finds Magneto. He recognizes him as an enemy, but still wants to bring him to Atlantis to see what they might be able to do. And that kind of ends issue 12.
Wow. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts?
Yeah. When I first had a look at... 'cause I'd not really read this in detail since the very first time, which was, as you say, 25 years ago now. And so, yeah, and when I looked at it the other day for the first time, and I didn't read it in detail, I just kind of skim read it. And there were one or two things I'd forgotten about. And then, but looking through it like that, I thought, oh, this is a bit disappointing. And it made me think, well, I mean, the artworks, of course, is not disappointing. That's great. But yeah, the sort of storyline and what actually happens in here. And I felt that maybe because his stories from like the beginning of this run mostly have been set in the Savage Land. Mm-hmm. And it's been dragging on and dragging on, this connection with the Savage Land. And I thought, now then. Did he get a kind of push from editorial to say, look, if we make it a double issue, can you clear this Savage Land thing up, you know, once and for all, so that you can move everything on and we don't keep seeing the Savage Land all the time?
It has been, you're right, like the entire series so far has been.
And I thought, I wondered if Byrne were kind of like losing a bit of control of where it was going. But anyway. Then when I read it in a bit more detail again and realized the connections that were in there, I thought, no, Byrne was planning this all along. And what I thought about the double issue was, thinking back, Byrne also had, because I thought usually issue 12s of a run are not double issue material. But he did the same with Namor. Number 12 of Namor was a double issue.
And Alpha Flight was.
And Alpha Flight, yeah. So I thought maybe it was planned after all, yeah, because it fits in with what he'd done before. Yeah. And it was necessary to finally kind of end the Savage Land connection, if you like, because really the main story there had happened and gone, and then he just got kind of the other mutants like Havoc, Lorna and Iceman involved, but they were kind of like an afterthought. And he'd somehow got to wrap everything up and also fit in the fact with current history of what happened to Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and how he finishes up when he next appears back in the 70s, whichever issue that was. So I think all in all, yeah, he did a good job of rounding everything off there. And there's one or two things that, yeah, I'll bring up about stuff I noticed in connection with that. So, yeah, overall, I liked the issue. Yeah, it's a good read. As I say, the artwork is very nice, as usual.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I agree with your sentiments. It was nice to finally wrap up. I do recall that for me, I was starting to get a little bored with this because it seemed like it kept just going on and on and on. And I'm like, let's wrap it up and move on to something else. Of course, that's because I'm used to two or three issue story arcs or kind of one and done type of things with minor subplots building in between to lead up to a bigger story that's told in 2 to 3 issues, or as in the case of the Phoenix Saga, you know, six
issues,
6 or 7. So yeah, it's this style is just, I wasn't used to it, and I, you know, didn't kind of really, not really fond of it. And it's a style that he used in Doom Patrol as well. And
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, not in his 90s stuff. He didn't do it then.
Oh,
but
okay. Yeah.
That I know of, you know, he didn't do it. It was more the old fashioned way where you kind of main stories, some minor subplots here and there that kind of eventually pay off in different ways. But
yeah.
I think that the double size issue was a good way to focus on the entire thing and kind of give it a good wrap up.
But, you know, yeah, as you say, he seemed to favor this style from like the end of the 90s onwards.
Yeah.
But when you think about it, it's not dissimilar to what Lee and Kirby were doing with Fantastic Four way back in the 60s. Because when you go back and read those, well, the Galactus trilogy is one example. I mean, it starts off in the first issue and, you know, moves into the second issue. But the first issue of the Galactus trilogy starts with the conclusion of the previous story where the Inhumans are getting cut off from the rest of the world, yeah? And then it flows into the beginning of the Galactus's coming storyline with the Silver Surfer. Then you get the middle issue, which is all about the Galactus story. And then, of course, in the third issue, yeah, it concludes the Galactus story, but then moves on to something else, doesn't it, before the actual end of that third issue. So he's kind of like running through different stories all the time in a non-stop kind of way.
Yes, he is.
And they did that in FF during that sort of sweet period between like the number 40s to the 70s or even 80s. So it's a similar style to that, really. Mm. And yeah, I quite like it. It's just, you have to keep up with everything that's going on, mm-hmm. Yeah, which can seem a bit confusing sometimes. Yeah. Mm. But yeah. I liked it. What do you think of this cover then?
Well, the cover is I like it a lot. It's a great cover. It definitely reminds me of the old era of the late Bronze Age or the early Bronze Age, late Silver. This would fit really well if it was continuing along in the series. Mm-hmm. And if Tom Palmer was inking this, because it didn't say if he was inking or not, it just said cover by Byrne. If he inked it, then that's probably why it is very reminiscent of that era. So I think it's perfect. It really maintains the flavor to me, or the style of the era of the X-Men at that time, or how it would have been or could have been.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I like the cover. Yeah, it's very, very sort of dramatic. We got Sauron in your face there.
Yeah, definitely.
Right up close. Yeah. Attacking Magneto, who's sort of fending him off. That's nice. They're well in the foreground. Yeah. The background, we got the three X-Men, yeah. So you could say that this could be a scene reminiscent of what we see inside the story, really. Which is also, it's always a plus when the cover actually, mirrors what you're going to see inside. And apart from the title, X-Men The Hidden Years, which is partially covered by Sauron's head, there's no other blurbs or anything to spoil the overall action picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
except for double-sized anniversary issue in the corner there. Yeah. But that's in the place of where you would have had heads of the characters. So it's not really in the way.
Yeah. Mm. It's actually nice.
It is. Yeah, it's a nice picture. Nice picture. Dare I mention hidden numbers?
You can. Absolutely.
Did you find the hidden number for this one?
I did. And I found it twice.
Oh, right. So where did you find the first one, shall we say?
Well, they're actually both in Iceman's sled.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you look, I see what you're 78 down.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Well, so we're looking for if this had been continuing on with. If they hadn't cancelled it, this would have been issue 78.
Yeah, that's right. And there it is, yeah, as you say, in Bobby's ice pillar that he's standing on. Yeah, yeah. So fairly easy to discover there.
No, that was nice.
It took a little bit,
but then I found it.
Yeah, yeah. You have to look closely because the colors that he uses there just hide it a little. Yeah, mm-hmm. You have to get close and then, there it is. That reminds me, that brings up a point that I wanted to mention about a previous cover that we've already looked at.
Yeah.
But which was a cover where we were never actually definite that what we found was the actual hidden number, and that was issue number 8.
Okay. Yeah.
The one with the Fantastic Four and yes. the 3 X-Men, yeah, when they go into space, right? And remember, we both looked at this intently, and the only thing I could come up with was I thought John Byrne was being clever and using maybe the number 7 on Beast's leg, along with the number 4 on Mr. Fantastic's actual costume to give you the 74, right? Which was the number we were looking for. It turns out that was not the hidden number.
Oh,
I were never fully 100% sure that it was, but we just couldn't find anything else.
Yeah, we were just kind of trying
anyway,
to make it work the best.
Yeah. And I found out because thanks to one of the fans on the Third Degree Burn page, they recently posted that picture that they actually used for that cover, but just the full picture as Burn had drawn it and it had been coloured. It was somebody called Amber Capricious put the picture on Third Degree Burn.
Okay.
And when I saw the full picture, I thought, and I enlarged it and I found the hidden number. And the reason we couldn't find the hidden number is because when they took that picture to use as the cover, they changed the size of it so that it would fit for the cover. And they chopped off the top quarter of the picture because that didn't really affect any of the characters or anything. And they also cut off the bottom part of the picture as well, the ground underneath the characters, as it were. And so they actually chopped off the hidden number. So we couldn't find it because they cut it off. It wasn't there. It's actually on the floor underneath Crystal's feet.
Oh, my.
But, of course, they chopped that bit off. So, yeah, you couldn't see it. And it's really fairly easy to find. But it wasn't there. So, yeah. It was really a missing number on that particular cover.
I will have to look for that.
So, yeah, have a look. If you find the picture, yeah. It's only been on about a week or so.
Okay.
And you'll see the 74 clearly underneath Crystal's feet.
Mm. Oh, great.
And I think I read something in John Byrne's Byrne Robotics page about that as well. Apparently, he noticed after a while that some of the issues where he'd been putting the hidden numbers on, and they are the ones that we've gone through where we said, oh, it's really hard this time.
Uh-huh.
And he noticed that due to different printings and things, they were either cutting off his number or covering it up with letters. And so after he realized that, he started making sure himself that he either put the number where it definitely wouldn't get cut off, like on the figures or something in the foreground, or he made sure that they printed it in full and didn't chop off any of the background stuff. And so he kept checking on them after a while to make sure they were still there. Yeah, which is why from now on we should be able to find all the numbers if we look hard enough.
That is good to know.
Yeah, they're not all easy to find, but they are all there. Yeah, we're not going to get tricked by a missing number or whatever.
Mm. So I'm glad to hear that.
So thank you to Amber Capricious for putting that on and solving that problem.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. And so, yes, so that was the missing number on this particular issue, yes, underneath Iceman. Now, going into the story itself, did you notice something else that was missing at all? Did you feel that somebody was missing?
From you, from the team, or?
Well, from somebody who we saw in the last issue, but never gets a mention even in this issue, and does not appear.
Ooh, I didn't.
No? Well, who was traveling last time we saw them with Havoc and Lorna?
You know, it's been so long, I have forgot. Just tell me.
Hazel.
Oh, right.
And he's gone, yeah? He's gone, and there's no mention of him by the characters, like, oh, we dropped Kazar off in such and such a place, or no mention in the narratives boxes of, after they dropped off Kazar, blah, 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 yeah? He's just gone, as if Byrne forgot.
That's funny.
That he was with them in the previous issue. I don't know whether he did forget, but he certainly doesn't get even a mention that he's disappeared. He's just not there anymore. Yeah.
That's funny. Definitely.
Wow. And I thought, yeah, and I thought, oh, where's Kazar?
Interesting. Speaking of which, I think it's funny that in that flying card, Lorna is just kind of lounging in the back seat. I mean,
yeah.
Who does that?
Just, who does that? Well,
I wouldn't have thought that, oh, you know, I'll just lounge around in the back. I would be sitting up and paying, especially in an open air vehicle that's flying across the ocean, you know, I'd be like, strap me in, give me a...
Well, yeah, there is that. Or what I was going to say is, don't you think, though, sometimes if you're a little afraid of heights, if you're traveling in such a vehicle as that, if you lay down, you can't see, you know, what's underneath you or what's not underneath you in this case. And so it kind of could feel safer to not see what's out there, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I suppose.
It's like traveling on a coach on one of those windy mountain roads in Italy or something like that. If you can see out the window, because the coaches are quite a high vehicle, and you can see over the drop, and you think, oh, God, you know, if we're not careful, we could go over. But if you were in a smaller vehicle on the same road, you wouldn't see the drop. And so it's a psychological thing. You feel safer, even though you're not. And maybe it could be that she felt safer laying like that, where she can't see outside of the surroundings of the craft. I don't know. Or maybe she's just a lazy lounger.
Yeah.
Who, whenever she gets the opportunity, lays down. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's funny.
It looks good, that. It's kind of, as you say, it's humorous, and she's sort of, maybe she's relaxed enough to be able to do that. Mm. And, what we are, Ashley, with the Sentinel, or the bits of Sentinel. And she's looking quite fierce there with the red eyes.
Mm. Well, she does, definitely is scary. Looking angry there, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And she has a go at Professor X, whacking him back in his wheelchair.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing. They always say, when you get a child with power and they end up with a temper tantrum, you've got problems, because they don't know what to control it. Yeah, definitely. Especially this lady. And, you know, of course, she thought the Sentinel was her friend.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she doesn't understand that, he really wasn't. He was going to revert to the programming at some point.
Yes, yeah, he would have discovered that she was a mutant eventually, and then she would have been in trouble.
Mm. Yeah, but you know, that nice little interlude there to kind of bring us back to, you know, just to let us know what's happening. Mm. He hasn't forgotten him. But I find it odd. I always thought that the Savage Land was this hidden place that was hard to get to, but you know, here we've got this guy hanging, you know, this Kruger guy hanging out there with a ship full of people. And
oh, but he that's not in the Hidden Land, though, is it?
No, but he got. Oh, that's right. Candy and them, he didn't get from the.
Yeah, it caught the others, but yeah, they'd escaped the right. Hidden Land, hadn't they? Yeah. Before he got hold of them, it was Warren and
the
flying girl.
Yeah, they had first. Somehow. That's right. Okay, you're right.
Yeah, yeah, they're not in the Savage Land, but yeah, the Savage Land all of a sudden seems to be being discovered by everybody. It's like a new tourist spot now.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's go to the Savage Land for our holidays. Yeah. So more and more people are turning up there. True. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. But I kind of like Candy in this Marvel Girl outfit. Because I like this Marvel Girl outfit. So seeing Candy in it is fine. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I like the way he brought her into the story anyway.
Yeah.
Because she had started to appear in the later issues of the original X-Men run before they went to the reprints. So we were aware of her. And then because by having that gap that they had in originally, she kind of immediately disappeared again. Because when they came back, it was the all new, all different X-Men. And she wasn't around for ages.
Mm-hmm.
But here, yeah, I like her as a character, so I'm glad he brought her in to it.
Yes, me too. Mm. Definitely. Mm.
And it's a good little, it's a good little plot twist there, because, yeah, she's acting as a mutant, but because she's not, yeah, she's not really unconscious. She's only play acting. So she gets a chance to escape. But she, perhaps because of the way she's dressed, she gets a bit carried away with the fact that she might be a superhero and attempts to take out the bad guys, which was not a good idea.
Yeah. And then she found out really quickly that they don't mess around.
Yeah, they're not messing around, and she has no real protection or defense. Yeah. One thing I noticed when you were, it's not your fault, you were reading out the synopsis by somebody else, but they sort of said that Mastermind, Eunice, and the Blob come aboard this ship, but they don't. The Blob's not there, is it?
You're right.
It's only Mastermind and Eunice that come first of all to have a look at the goods, as it were. Mm.
Yeah, because they eventually deliver. They end up back in their hideout, wherever that is.
Yeah. And Blob's taking a bath.
Yeah, okay. Getting himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is definitely in Drake and Blob's character.
Mm-hmm.
He seems like that type of guy.
Yeah.
But you know, and since it's been so long, I truly have no recollection of what's going on with this part of the story. So I will be surprised when we get to it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not sure. I mean, they've obviously, then now the evil mutants have got, well, three of the X-Men plus Candy. Yeah. They're collecting them quite well. I can't remember what exactly happens next with that particular plot. Mm-hmm. I liked the Mastermind illusion there. Pretty simple and straightforward, but enough to send an ordinary person bonkers. where she's going down these steps that keep going on forever, and then going up the steps and down the steps, and she's like, there's no end to the steps till it sort of zonks her out. Yeah. Hmm. That's more like the kind of illusions he was using at the time. Hmm. This is before the Jason Wingard thing, of course.
Yeah, this is more in line with his original character as we first used to have him.
Yeah. Simple but effective illusions to boggle the mind. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Magneto finds the geothermal shafts and everything.
Yeah, and then the rest of the book is just continuing the Savage Land story. So
right.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm wondering, this must have led to the lair that Magneto had for X-Men 113 when he captured them and put, do you think?
Because that was supposedly under the Antarctic.
Yes.
And it which was, is where the Savage Land is.
And surrounded by the volcano, because that's how they escaped. Mm. So I'm figuring this must be leading into that. It doesn't necessarily say it, but...
No, but it's... Yeah, if you've read the other stories, you can put two and two together easily enough, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought that, yeah. I mean, this is probably the first time he finds what will become his Antarctic base in later years when he fights the all-new X-Men.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah, yeah, yeah. And, then he gets, and he doesn't realize that the two men he's going to attack are mutants, Carl Lycos and Iceman.
And he wouldn't know what Iceman looks like without his...
No, probably not without his ice. Or would he? No, he would. I'm going back to the original X-Men run. After the Sentinels story, Iceman goes back to the mansion. No, sorry. Everybody else goes back to the mansion first, and they all get tricked and clobbered by Magneto, don't they? But Iceman doesn't go back at first because he's too ill. He stays in the hospital. And then when he does get discharged and he goes back, he faces Magneto on his own at first. And I'm not sure. I thought then he may have seen him as Bobby.
Okay. But he might not have.
I'd have to look at it again. But yeah, there's a chance he met him as Bobby then.
But even quite then, remember.
But would he remember him? Yeah. Yeah. But there's a possibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Mm. Lycos is hunting, trying to find any way, kind of like the vampire stories today. How can I be a vampire without being a vampire? Yeah. Instead.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Mm. And then Magneto finds them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Blast. That's a great age.
Energy blast.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Shows off Magneto's power and his so I really liked it. So great pages coming up when Lycos grabs the power from Bobby, and there he becomes Sauron again.
And becomes Sauron, right? Yeah. And have you noticed something about this? Yeah. Again, going back to the previous issue we covered, number issue 11. What was the last thing we saw?
I don't remember. I should have looked at it, and I didn't.
Well, the last thing we saw was this again, where Lycos gets hold of Iceman and turns into Sauron.
Ooh.
And that was the last picture on the last page of the previous issue when he turns into... It's even very similar because he's shouting, "I am Sauron," and sort of taking off. That's where number 11 ended. So, in effect, then, we've gone nearly two-thirds of the way through this issue. And what we've been looking at is stuff that happened in time before the end of the previous issue. Byrne's done one of his turning time back plots, as he did in Alpha Flight 4. Because he did the same there, yeah? At the end of Alpha Flight 3, Submariner and the Invisible Girl suddenly appeared. Yeah, that was the last page. They were saying, "Ha ha, Master, you're not going to kill her." And then through the issue of the FF as well, and then the Alpha Flight 4 issue, we go back through what's happened between, earlier, should I say, back up to the point where they appear watching the Master, which again was about two-thirds of the way through issue 4 of Alpha Flight. So he's done the same, he's used the same trick again here. And he's doing it for the second time at least. But if anybody were to say, oh, he's just using the same plot again, but then Byrne could say, aha, yeah, but although I'm using that plot again, the events of this comic actually take place before the events of the comic in which I did it the first time.
Right.
So, which is the first, really, you know, which is the original. So it's a nice little trick, I thought, anyway.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good. It is a good little trick to do it that way.
And he does seem to like doing that. Mm-hmm. Putting you in a position in a particular like story or and where it is in time, and then going next issue or whatever, going back and coming forward again to reach the same point again from a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Yeah.
You agree?
I do agree, yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that when I went through this again, and I thought, ah, yeah, this where he turns to Sauron. Yeah, this was the end of the previous issue. So we've actually gone back in time, and now we are where we left off last issue.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And now we're caught up.
But he's filled in what was happening to everybody else meantime, yeah. Mm.
It's too bad that he didn't have like a chapter break, and that's where he picked it up, you know, chapter two, and that's where
yeah. I mean, yeah, some people might have done it that way, yeah. Some writers, yeah.
Then the battle ensues, and all of a sudden Magneto thinks that he is fighting the full team of the X-Men, and for brief second, I thought, did they insert the wrong pages here?
Yeah. What's this? True. It's the Sauron effect, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it is, definitely. Mm. So, you see Sauron's eyes right there. So, yeah, it goes right into it. And then, and these are very colorful pages, too. The colors are very
strong. They are, yeah. They're really popping on these pages.
Yeah, definitely. Because yeah. I have the physical copy in my hand.
Yeah, me too.
And Bobby, of course, you can see some of his contempt for Havoc in his face, which is good. Byrne is really good about putting expressions in faces when he's doing that. So I thought that, you know, like on page, or well, does it have a page? The page where it shows him and Lorna and Alex talking, and he's like, nice.
Yeah.
Their jack brain. You could just see.
Yeah, I've got it. Yeah. Yeah. He's got that snarl on his face. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, I thought he kept the progression of the battle going well for me. I mean, I was a little pause and then battle, a little pause, then battle, like pause for Havoc and Polaris and Bobby and Iceman to kind of chat for a bit, but then it goes right back into the battle. A lot of angular things. He's definitely not doing the normal grid style of artwork. So I think that really helps keep the images very, especially on the page where right after Magneto is freed and Sauron is trying to get Havoc hypnotized, it does hypnotize Havoc. That to me is very much in the style that Neil Adams had done in the issues of the 60s, you know, so really good for me, really great.
Oh yeah, he's definitely, yeah. As you say, with the panels in this, he's definitely channeling the Neil Adams look there, right down to the odd-shaped panels and full bleed panels and yeah, what have you. It's not a straightforward 4 or 6 panel layout as you see in most of the comics around that time, 70s and that and 80s. Yeah, I like that. When it's done well, it works. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And of course, it seems to me like the ending is getting a little bit rushed here, probably because he ran out of space and he probably just maybe had that edict like you thought. Wrap it up, John. Wrap.
Yeah, gotta wrap it up. Yeah.
You know that that Magneto would lose control of the magma that he had, but then he's not used to working with magma. But he is.
Well, and also he's not. His natural mutant powers are not
right, and he did
really
lose.
Good at this stage, are they? So he's being helped by
that machine.
Artificial machines. Yeah, and then of course when Iceman destroyed. Whatever it was.
there it goes.
The equipment that they set up to help him control everything. That was it. He lost his power over the... Well, it looks like he lost his power to hover as well.
Yeah.
He falls to the ground, yeah.
Completely lost it. Now, I kind of found that Bobby Flint Iceman going down into the magma pit to save Magneto, for me, feels slightly out of character for Iceman. Mm. I kind of think Iceman would have been the one that said, let him go.
Yeah.
Havoc might have been the kind that would say, no, we need to, X-Men aren't like that.
Yeah, Bobby would be like, yeah.
Am I off a little
good
bit?
Riddance. No, I think, yeah, Bobby would be the one who'd probably say, good riddance to bad rubbish kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether anybody else would be willing to go down there, except for maybe somebody like Cyclops, but he's not here. So, the rest would probably think, oh, good riddance. Yeah, we got rid of him at last. Again, because he keeps coming back. He's like a bad penny. He keeps coming back. Yeah.
And he does come back again.
And he does come back, yeah. But I didn't like... I guess he needed to do this, though, because so that it fit in more with the stories of the 70s that had already gone by. But this business where Sauron hypnotizes them all into not remembering that they fought him, or even not remembering that they fought Magneto... But yeah. I guess they had to do that because of some of the stories in the early 70s. You know, you could say, they fought Magneto then. Why did they not mention this or that? It would have been a loophole that they could trip him up on.
Yeah.
So by doing this, he covers his back with the story. You know, they don't remember, and therefore next time they meet Magneto, they don't know that they saw him before. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Cheesy in a way, but I guess it was necessary to do something like that.
Mm. Yep. Mm. Yeah. It did seem like Sauron gave up a little too quickly, but... Because Sauron...
He
definitely, once he sees mutants, he definitely wants to have their power.
Their power, yeah.
But, yeah, okay, it fits for the story. But like you said, it's got to move on.
Epilogue, yeah, as you say, we have to see that Magneto survived. Although, do you notice the shadow on the floor there where he's crawling?
I did see the shadow, yeah.
It's like, ooh, the vultures are coming, or in this case, the pterodactyls are swarming around waiting to pick on his bones kind of thing, yeah. And then, yeah, the second, the epilogue, prologue of sorts, it says, yeah. Namor again, and again, something similar to what I noticed in the Alpha Flight plots. Namor's coming along here, yeah, into these waters because they've noticed there's a problem, yeah. He dives in here and he says, the waters are warm and they should be icy. It's a similar kind of thing to what happened in FF260, which led him to going into the Alpha Flight story. There's something in the water that was not right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he comes up and finds the island and finds Magneto.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and at the bottom of this, next to the last page, yeah, where he's shouting Imperious Rex and throwing the pterodactyls away, in the corner it says, after Kirby, circa 1970. So maybe there's a picture very much like this in perhaps a Submariner issue. Do you know what this relates to?
I would not. We should check with our Submariner friend, Kirk.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet Kirk might know which Submariner issue or whatever it was this appears in, or this picture that must be very similar to this.
Either that, or it's in reference to the last page. Because that the page at the bottom is a reproduction of the cover of Fantastic Four.
Oh yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, but then why would they put the
maybe because know, the they didn't Kirby have on for that one. I don't know.
yeah. Although I do seem, as I look at the picture as he's throwing the pterodactyls away, although I can't really remember it fully, I think. Maybe I have seen that pose before, but I don't know where. yeah.
It's probably a standard one for some.
Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if, as I say, there's a picture very much like that in a Submariner issue from the early 70s. Kirk's probably got it, yeah. But,
yeah.
And that reference. And then, as you say, he picks up Magneto and takes him back to Atlantis. Just as he invited Marina to come back to Atlantis with him after the Alpha Flight story. And there's so many connections to that Alpha Flight. Yeah, it's amazing when you look at it.
Yeah, it is, definitely. Definitely interesting how he did all of that, for sure.
Yeah. And then, of course, yeah, they show you that sort of ghostly image of what's to come off the cover of one of the FF stories for the future, yeah, with Magneto.
Yeah.
Which is good. I like the way he's going to tie all that in.
And yeah, with this, he didn't even give us any kind of a hint as to how the next year was going to start. It just ends here. Basically, this would jump off into Fantastic Four, and then where do we go?
And all we've got left is what's going to happen to the X-Men that the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants have at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that and Ashley. So we've got two storylines to work on.
Cleaning the palette a little to ready to throw something new at us. Yeah, I like it.
I like it too. So overall, it was a good way to end that chapter and get us, like you said, a wipe the slate and start it again. And I'm still wondering, what is Candy doing? What is her? So he's working well with the mystery. What is she?
Well, as she said originally, she has a message for Warren.
Yeah.
That she says she must deliver herself, but that's as far as we've got. And then she's got caught up in this new episode, if you like, this and she's stuck with the rest of the X-Men, so we still don't know, because until she meets Warren, she's not going to be able to deliver the message. But that might be coming soon, yeah, because they've also got Warren's there, yeah, they've got Warren here,
yeah. So
if they get chance to talk to one another, hopefully she will reveal what the message is.
And we'll have it. That'll be great.
So maybe that's going to be coming up in the next couple of issues. But yeah, very good. I really like the way that he wrote this and how he's connected everything together with the stuff from the 70s.
Yes, absolutely. That's almost like a Roy Thomas move.
Very clever. Even though some people, I don't know, I've read things where some people criticize this run. They don't particularly like it for whatever reason, but I think it's excellent.
So far, it's been a fun read.
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely has been a fun read. Yeah.
And there you go. Yeah. So we're back on course for season two.
Absolutely.
As we move on with the X-Men The Hidden Years.
So our next entry will be 13 and 14.
We'll have a look at 13 and 14, yes, and see what gets revealed there.
And we'll have some fun.
Looking forward to it, yes.
Yeah. Great. Well, any other thoughts about this? Or I think we've covered it all, haven't we?
No, I've not got anything else that I particularly want to raise here. Yeah, it was, as you say, it was a good way to finish off that particular plot thread and gets Magneto onto his next real appearance, if you like, in the comics, as it were. Yeah. Yep. So he's got him to a point where it all connects with continuity and we're ready to move on.
And we are. And definitely invite our listeners to tell us what you thought of this issue and what do you think of the Savage Land story overall? How did it work for you? How did the progression go? I mean, it really started, who would have even thought we would end up with Magneto when we first entered the Savage Land? When you entered the Savage Land, you know it's going to bring in Sauron at some point.
Yeah.
We just definitely had to, because the last time we saw Carl was he was falling back into the crevice to go to the Savage Land. So you had to know that would be coming up. And let us know. Pop in over at our Facebook group, Third Degree Burn. That's with the number 3RD, Degree Burn. And of course, they can always email us, gottagetburned@gmail.com. And as Kirk always likes to say, leave us a review on Apple. So that's really good. So we'll do all that. And then it's going to come again with our standard announcements, but we're really good to be back on our side. We were going to try to call this like the Sideburn Project, right?
Yes. Sideburn. Yes. Yeah.
So a lot of fun. Well, Nigel, it's been great talking with you about this.
Yeah, enjoyed it. It's good to be back with the Hidden Years. Yeah.
And we get all this knocked out and taken care of. We've got to go. So thanks a lot.
All right. Yeah. Thank you for listening, everyone. And tune in next time. Goodbye.
Bye.
Silence! Sauron, and Sauron alone, will rule the Savage Land. I will absorb every ounce of energy you possess. I can feel it building, flowing through me. No, it is too much! To me! No one challenges Sauron and lives!
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3RDDEGREEBYRNE and is part of the 22 Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's gottagetburned@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.